Okay, we're recording now. This is our Ending Well gathering hosted by the UUMA and led by many colleagues in a variety of roles. I'll introduce them in a moment. First, I'll invite you to introduce yourselves in the chat if you wish. Tell people who you are and where you are and other things you might like to share about yourself. I'm Melissa Carvel-Zemer. I'm the UUMA's Director of Ministries for Collegial Care and happy to be our host today for this session. I use she/her pronouns. I live in Western Massachusetts, which are the ancestral land of Nipmuc, Pocumtuck, and others. And I'm really happy today to be inviting several colleagues to share about their experiences of ending well. We will hear from Joel Miller, Jan Taddeo, Christy Lunsford, and Shelley Page about their own experiences of ending well. Then we'll hear from Megan Foley, who is one of the Congregational Life leads, who will be sharing some insights from Congregational Life staff about ending well. And then we'll hear from some of the staff in the Transitions Office. We'll have Patrice Curtis, Christine Purcell, and Keith Cron with us from Transitions today. And I'm not sure which of them has decided to speak at that time, but all of them may speak at some point because after those little mini reflections, we'll have a time for questions and answers. We hope to have a good 20 to 25 minutes for you to ask your questions and to hear from colleagues with a depth of experience to share. And then we'll close. We'll be here for about an hour. When we get to the questions and answers, you're welcome to send your questions to me privately in the chat, or you can just post them in the chat for everybody to see. Regardless, I will endeavor to organize them a bit in case there's more than one question on the same topic so we can get through as many of the topics you'd like to discuss as possible. And if your question is complex and you think would merit everyone's collective attention, you'll have a chance to unmute and ask it yourself. That's our plan for today. If you have any technical troubles or other questions during the session, feel free to reach me in the chat and I will do my best to help you. We're going to turn now to our colleagues who have prepared little reflections about their experiences of ending well to share with you. And we'll start with Joel Miller. Welcome, Joel.
Hi, thank you so much, Melissa. I go by pronouns he, him, and it's really good to see colleagues. I get a feeling of joy when I see faces, some who I know, some who I haven't seen in a while, and some who are new to me. And it's so important just to know you're there. I'm thinking about three things when I think about leaving. And I do a lot of leaving because I'm an interim minister. I've been an interim minister now for 13 years. And leaving well sometimes is as an interim, I may be the first minister that leaves well for a congregation. And so it's an important experience for a congregation. I learned about leaving well when I didn't leave well from one of the first congregations I served, which was the Columbine UU Church in Littleton, Colorado. And in 1999, there were the shootings there. The congregation was pretty traumatized. And the board and I had actually been in conversation about my leaving. And then with the trauma, it was just a swirl of how do we process that experience? How do we process the disappointments around what we'd aspired to and what the reality was? And so I didn't leave well from there. And there was a lot of sadness for some time around that in my experience. And it was hard on the congregation. It was really hard on them. When I left after 11 years in my next congregation, that was Buffalo, New York, I knew I wanted to leave well. Now, I only gave them 3 months' notice. I think 3 months is good. Actually, 2 months is a minimum. One of the things that really struck me in that experience was being the sole minister in a congregation that was probably around 400 active members, was how much energy it took to leave. It was exhausting. And so I had to give myself a lot of downtime in order to connect well as I said goodbye. And the other thing it took, all of a sudden, everybody started coming out of the woodwork, literally, can I have lunch with you? I need to meet with you. I need to talk with you. I had a lot of scheduling. I had to balance my schedule with the lunches and the coffees and even just sometimes quick meetings in my office. Sometimes it was just 15 minutes. But it was so important for those connections to happen at the end, kind of a follow-up. And one of the things that really struck me about leaving Buffalo, in addition just to my own real sense of loss, because I realized not only was I processing the loss I'd experienced in the previous congregation, but I was really sad to be leaving. And I was sad about having left the prior congregation. And that experience has actually never changed. My job is to love the people I serve, and it's a sense of loss when I leave. And one thing that really grounds that grieving process as I say goodbye is a handshake or a hug, some physical contact there at the very end. I don't know what that is exactly, but it really does ground me and the people in the congregation as I say goodbye. So that's the some of the context. Just as a practical matter, timing as an interim minister. A couple of things I want to say. Try not to announce you're leaving more than a year in advance, because that's a long time. More than 2 months, preferably three, is good. And don't leave until it's time to leave. Don't say, oh, well, there, you know, I'm on my way out, and then just kind of be unavailable. That's really hard on a congregation, and it's not leaving well. Even if it's a painful leaving, if it's a negotiated resignation, it's just so important to be present. Make sure the board has a going away party for you, especially if it's a painful leaving. Even, it's very important. Let's see, and then loving. Even if it's a hard leaving and you really don't like them very much in the moment, our job is to love them as best as we can. And that's very helpful in a leaving, no matter what it is. I really wanted to keep this at 5 minutes. I had a lot of thoughts on it, but don't leave until you leave, and love them as you go.
Thank you so much, Joel. We'll turn next to hear some reflections from Jan Taddeo.
Thank you, Melissa. Just a little bit more about me. I live in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, on the historic lands of the Creek and the Muscogee tribes. My pronouns are she, her. I have silver and light brown hair with blue highlights, and I'm wearing dark blue rimmed glasses, a turquoise blouse, and a black sweater. Behind me is a beach scene of a beach in Florida. I'm a fifth generation Unitarian Universalist, and I served in many lay leadership and staff positions in congregations and two of our former UUA districts before becoming ordained in 2011. So I'd seen a lot of different dynamics in congregations over the years. I retired from settled ministry last June after serving a congregation here in Georgia for 12 years. Ours was a truly rewarding, healthy, and mostly drama-free shared ministry. With deep gratitude to the interim minister who preceded me, I stepped into a congregation that had let go of problematic practices and behaviors that left them minister shopping every 5 years or so, to one that fully embraces covenantal relationships and had a high commitment to a healthy relationship with their new minister. I emphasize this because I know this was a gift for beginning well in this congregation, and I think our beginning well made our ending well more possible. In January of 2022, I shifted to halftime ministry, largely because of the financial challenges that persisted since the pandemic. Around that same time, I started the process of learning how to end well. Over the summer, I contacted colleagues who had ended well, as well as an interim minister to get their ideas. I contacted Keith Prong in the fall of 2022 to get his sage advice. I did not tell anyone in the congregation or on staff that I was planning to retire. I did not want to put that burden on them to hold that confidence, and I didn't want to risk rumors getting started. One thing I did that may have put a hint in the air was to send a holiday greeting card to every member in the congregation in December/January before my announcement in February. In these cards, I thanked each of them for specific ways they have contributed to congregational life. This wasn't too unusual. I had done this in the past, but not regularly every year. One person with whom I had a challenging relationship emailed to say, "Sounds like you are getting ready to retire." He was not active in congregational life, and there was no indication he shared his hunch with anyone else. I followed Keith's advice to the T. I waited until mid-February to speak with the board president and president-elect a few days before the board meeting to make sure I had time on the agenda. I spoke with each staff person the afternoon of the board meeting. I also contacted each of our five lay ministers before the meeting. I had a letter queued up to send automatically to all our members near the end time of the board meeting. Reactions were mostly supportive and positive, in large part because my reasons for leaving were primarily about moving closer to our son in Kansas. I didn't talk much about just how tired and burned out I still felt from the challenges of the pandemic. I was running out of juice. There was an email exchange between two board members that expressed some anger and some concerns about some of our board members' capacity to do their job in this gap time. And we worked those out in the spirit of our covenant. And the anger was just one of those stages of grief that quickly dissipated. Our shared ministry council worked with me to plan how various programs would continue to be managed in the gap between my departure and the next minister's arrival. The board appointed a search committee to seek a halftime contract minister. I started beating the bushes of Facebook to encourage colleagues to consider applying for this position because this is a wonderful congregation. We celebrated our shared ministry with a big dance party a few weeks before I left, and we shared in a beautiful and meaningful ritual of release from covenant just before the end. They are now having the excellent beginning well that I hoped for both their new minister and the congregation with whom I have a healthy relationship, and we are operating in a covenantal manner, though we haven't created a formal document as yet. I was very clear with the congregation from the start that I love them each and all with all my heart, and in order for their next minister to be able to do the same, I needed to get out of the way, and I have. And I actually appreciate having that space too. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. You shared a lot, and we really appreciate you taking the time to prepare those reflections. Christy Lunsford, we'll turn to you next.
Great. So, hi, I'm Christy. I am a trans masculine, non-binary person who uses they, them pronouns. And I'm currently serving as interim minister in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the land of the Miami. So I took a different kind of tack on the conversation. And that I come out of a system, that my home congregation is a system who suffers from trauma from poor leaving. And what that anxiety looks like in a system is what I was brought up in. I joined as a staff member before I actually, after leaving, after ordination, I became a member of the congregation. But as a staff member, I was blessed to have a colleague in leadership who really understood what that system was, what it looked like, and that this trauma that they were carrying were holding things like, we can't be supportive of our staff in growth in positive ways because they might grow out of needing us and leave. So that anxiety in the system. So They didn't like it that I went away for credentialing necessarily. They didn't like it that the DRE was going away from credentialing. I was in music at the time. They didn't want us to grow because we would outgrow them. And they put expectations that were short-sighted for themselves on that same growth pattern. And there was a lot of misdirected anger because they didn't want to be angry at the staff who might be leaving. So they were angry at the UUA for everything. Didn't matter what it was. They got angry with the UUA and took this grief out in their relationships with UUA. So I was taught by the Reverend Dawn Cooley, who many of you probably have had many conversations with, about how to handle leaving. Because it just so happened that we staggered our leaving. We had an intern who was leaving. I was transitioning from music. Our DRE knew that they were leaving for ministry. And eventually, Dawn themselves knew that they would be leaving. Now, the order doesn't matter. It actually got flipped around who left first. But Dawn was really clear about teaching us all about at least a 3 months minimum. And at the time, I took the information as clear the decks. Take everything off your schedule and take every phone call and every pop-up meeting from that day forward. I took that as like, oh yeah, sure. That's not going to happen really, kind of advice. Fast forward to my ministry in Gainesville, Florida, which was a lovely ministry. It was a lovely call. It was exactly what I wanted. And having exactly the same thing around COVID happen with my staff. The staff grew. They decided this was not what they needed anymore, and they needed to move to the next thing in life. And so I passed that information on and that good leaving on to them and saying, this is how we do this. We're going to have 3 months of you telling them. You're going to clear the decks. You're actually going to meet with all the people that want to take you to lunch and dinner and let them love you, even though it's painful for maybe painful for you. We'll do some event with your leaving. I transitioned an entire staff twice over before I myself found myself in the position of having to leave the congregation. And for me leaving, I had gone in with as a marginalized identity, holding the idea that if I got 4 good years, that was wonderful, but I was looking for 10. I got 4. COVID was hard, but that's not, didn't have that much to do with my leaving. It was more around identity in the state of Florida. My life situation with family had changed, and the congregation was severely short on their budget. And the only way I could see them moving forward in a healthy way was to say, I need to leave so that you can find your next ministry. Timing is everything. And one of the things that made me tell them a little before the 3 month mark was Holy Week, falling in a really bad area in the calendar. So I had to tell them before and was like, okay, we're going to go right into Holy Week knowing I'm leaving. I also want to share with you, I knew there was a ministerial shortage. Though we have plenty of numbers, we don't have people moving necessarily in the right lanes. And I knew there was a potential that they wouldn't get an interim, that they wouldn't maybe even have the money for an interim, and that they were going back to a year of lay-led, which they had done before. And so I started strategizing solely by myself, because I hadn't told anybody yet, about what project they had on the back burner, or even if they were pushing it forward, that could carry them into a year, potentially without a minister. They did have a solar project they had been pushing, and they really wanted to take it into the annual meeting, which was right before I announced my leaving. And I convinced the solar project to trust me. This was not the time to ask the congregation for $100,000. And of course, I couldn't tell them I was leaving. So being strategic about leaving was really important to me because I love them desperately and I want them to succeed in all that they do. And I know that they too carried that same anxiety about what if we don't get a minister? What if we don't move to the next nobody loves us scenario of anxiety? And so for me, the leaving from Florida was setting them up for a ministry launch with or without a minister. What was it going to look like? I was also very clear because boundaries are a thing in Florida. We tried as a community of ministers to teach boundaries to every congregation in Florida. And so I was really clear about, I cannot have contact with you and what that leaving looks like. I love you desperately. I might see you somewhere else down the road, but for now I have to say goodbye and we can't be in conversation. Knowing that to be true, I share with you that I have just been contacted by the administrator, who knows that he can always reach out to me. He just wanted to let me know that they successfully not only funded, but have installed their solar array. And that they all know and have blessed that solar array as part of my ministry time with them. And they collected notes from that day into an envelope from a ritual that I did with them long before leaving, where I actually have people write letters to themselves on the first day of the year. And I mail them on the in the mid-year, about July 4th. They have done that with their solar array. They know they can't contact me until a date. And that date is on the envelope to mail all those notes to me about their solar array. For me, that's a good leaving, right? They still feel, they feel loved. They feel like they can move forward. They're doing good work with a coach right now in what their next thing looks like, their next ministry looks like. And I just feel like that's the biggest gift we can give, is making sure that they know that there will be more ministry. They continue on and it's theirs to love and to find the next thing to carry Unitarian Universalism into the world. And it may take them a little bit, and we come back around, always loving them. Even I think in the hard times. I know it was preemptive to them, and that was a lot of my leaving meetings where people that wanted to sit with me and said, this is not what we planned. And I said, you're right, it's not. And those meetings are hard and you need more time for yourself. As Joel was talking, you need more time for your self-care as much as you do to meet with them, because it's hard to leave them.
Thank you so much for sharing those learnings from tender, tough and tender times, Christine. We'll turn next to Shelley Page.
Yeah, hello from Lawrence, Kansas, where I am the developmental minister. And I was asked to talk about leaving developmental ministry, which is its own animal compared to what some of my colleagues have just been describing. So a typical developmental ministry is somewhere between 4 and 7 years. And I had kind of an open-ended contract situation here. And I'm also turning 70 this year and would really love to retire from full-time parish ministry. And so here I was, knowing that that would time out to the end of year 4. I was also doing a good discernment for myself about, well, where are they on developmental goals? Are we really working on stuff? And the answer was, in spite of the pandemic, yeah, we were making good progress. My concern was setting up our leaders, and then by setting them up, setting the congregation up to learn and discern to make a good choice about the next step. Because it's not like a settled minister leaving where, oh, we're going to get an interim, most likely. It's like, no, the choice is, are we going for settled ministry or contract to call? And there's a lot of discernment around that, as well as anxiety about, in this pastoral-sized congregation, do we have the money for a full-time minister really, truly, really, truly? And so I wanted to set them up for success, having a good period of learning and discerning. So I contacted Christine Purcell from our wonderful transitions office, and she did a meeting, a board meeting with them. We also did a whole weekend with the Stewardship for Us consultants. Rachel Maxwell came. They learned that they could have a full-time minister. They could have confidence about that. And so with all, and they also studied up on all of the resources I could throw at them about the settlement handbook and all kinds of other things that are just available online. With all of that knowledge and with that confidence from having those meetings with the experts, as well as encouraging them to talk with regional staff, which they did. They did have consultation with Lisa Presley from my area of the country. They felt like they could make a decision. They made a decision in, this happened, by the way, this initial conversation with the board was in fall of 2022. These consultations with experts were right after the holidays in 2023. In other words, about a year ago. And this was to be able to set them up to go into search if that was their desire. It turned out that was the desire of the board. They made a very considered decision about it. And then we had to decide how we were going to share that with the congregation. We decided to devote a whole worship service to where are we going now, kind of what's next steps. Please don't miss this one. You know, we talked it up a lot. And the people didn't, other than only the people on the board knew that I was going to be leaving them. Nobody else knew, well, and staff. No one else knew in the congregation. So this was the big reveal. And they handled that. We worked together about how to do that reveal. And it was extremely effective. I mean, a person on the board talked through the developmental goals and lifted up all of the progress that had been made and some of the key things that we're still working on. I did my retirement announcement, and then they had what they called a quality snack break for fun. And we came back from that snack break, and they it was a whole series of board members saying, why settled ministry? They explained their decision process very transparently, talking about then the milestones in the search process, because this congregation had not been through a true settled ministry search in the past. And also letting them know that you're going to be hearing from us about the search committee selection process. And they had ample time for Q&A, and people asked really thoughtful questions. You could tell the whole place was felt like they were being held, and they were like, oh, Shelley's leaving, and oh, we've got this new thing going on. Cool. So it was win-win-win. And of course, now it's just a matter of guiding them through the search process, which we're doing, as well as continuing on some of really important work in progress that was part of our developmental goals. So that's what we've been up to here. My actual leaving in terms of my actual retirement, last day and all of that, and what that's going to look like is still, you know, like, we'll get there. We haven't figured that part out. There will be a party. I know that. But the board has already said there will be a party. But we don't know what that all looks and feels like. And of course, that feels emotionally different for me, because it's a retirement leaving instead of the usual transitional ministry leaving, which is so long, been good to know ya. So it has a different emotional resonance for me. But that process has worked well for leaving a developmental ministry. And so I think that's great. I was also asked to speak mini, like super brief, about something I didn't expect to be asked to comment on, which is when I left a settled ministry. And that was when I was the settled minister in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. I'd been there 3 years. Partway through the third year, it became really clear that some things that were brewing right from the beginning of, even during the search process, got revealed in some pretty ugly ways in terms of some staff dynamics, but also some things that weren't healthy. And also became very realistic that there was a mismatch of my dreams and my expectations to work with these folks and what they felt they needed. I think the thing that was important there was not letting it get to the point of negotiated resignations or anything, but reading the room. And even though it was spring, saying, I'm jumping at my option at that point. I didn't want another settled ministry right off the bat. And also I was late in the game. And so my option at that point was looking at interim possibilities. And I, behind the scenes, you know, interviewed and was hired as interim by the Ogden, Utah congregation. And so I did not reveal any of that until I had a signed contract with those folks and knew that that was for sure happening. But then the leave taking there was very much not about, gosh, I just need to be out of here, guys, but just more like, you know, my dreams and your dreams aren't matching as well. And I love you. And I'm going to miss so many of you. Many, I didn't say it that way, but that's what I was thinking. But it was, so it was a good leave taking in that regard. And it did make a difference because it didn't let it get to the point of pain. And I think that was the smart thing. And I've been a happy professional transitional minister ever since. I really found my calling, which was an unexpected gift of a situation. So thank you for asking me to share. It's an honor to share with you, colleagues.
Thank you, Shelley. We'll turn now to Megan Foley, who brings some insights from Congregational Life staff.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks, everyone who shared. I think the wisdom in the room is definitely flowing. I am Reverend Megan Foley. I live in Silver Spring, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., in the land of the Piscataway and the Nacotchtank and others. I have short white hair, which is frankly doing something a little strange today because I went out in the rain, and I have clear glasses and a black turtleneck on, and I'm sort of a pinky white sort of person. I have two roles. I am the both the regional lead for the Central East region, and I'm also the deputy director for Congregational Life. So I work with Jessica York to oversee all of our staff who are serving you all as field staff across the country. We have about 45 folks who do that. So I think what's interesting about our vantage point is that we're, you know, we're caretaking congregations. So we're seeing them through multiple ministries, multiple departures, and we see the impacts of those departures on the congregations over time. I did check in with field staff for their input on this question or the questions that might come up today. And I got some, what I say today is sort of fueled by some of that, definitely the same themes coming up from all across the country and all of us. And I guess the framing for it that I want to tell you something you already know, which is that your impact as a minister in a congregation extends well beyond your tenure there, which is a beautiful thing. It's also a dangerous thing, right? So you'll want to enter this goodbye time with a lot of intentionality, because the ways in which your goodbye and your ministry has impacted them will extend. It can extend throughout the rest of their history together. It really does. It matters what you do. The most clear statement I got from colleagues was one who said, the minute you announce, your ministry changes from being a parish minister to being a chaplain for a group of people going through a grief process. So you know, that's freeing in some ways because you don't have to worry about the budget and you don't have to worry about the strategic planning anymore. You can just love them and wish them well and tidy up your stuff. But as many have noted, it is exhausting. You will need all the self-care you can garner to get through it. Not only because you have already gone through an emotional process of like considering and grief and doubt, trying to figure out what you're going to do, and you've gone through all that and arrived at a decision and then implemented a plan regarding that decision. By the time you announce, you're in a completely different emotional space than the people who just got surprised with the news, and you're really having to go through that process again with them in like a very grown-up way. And it's very tiring. It takes a lot out of people. It's a hard part of ministry for sure, but it can be a very lovely one because, you know, if you end gently, you can have a lot of your own closure can happen in the ministry as well. Please, please trust your colleagues through time and space. Those boundaries are there for a reason. And the reason is because not you, but your ministry there has to come to an end. And so if it takes the edge off to say to people, don't worry, you can talk to me again in 2 years, you can say that, but it will be different then, right? It will be, you will talk to them in 2 years maybe, but you won't be their minister anymore. And that's something that you have, I think both ministers and congregants, in the face of the grief of that change, often will act out in ways that aren't helpful. So, you know, just have that be part of your own grieving, and you're welcome to talk to colleagues and regional staff at any time about that process. It is not a small process, but it is one that your ministry is over there. It will be over there, even if you do get to like see them at the grocery store and check in eventually. The final thing I really want to talk about is when you're mad, if you're leaving mad. This is this period of time, this 3 months, maybe this period of time where you've announced and you're now a chaplain helping a group through a grieving process, that time for them is not a listening time. It's not a learning time. And so it's not particularly helpful, even if it weren't somewhat damaging, to like tell your truth during that time. Please, I am begging you, there should be no pulpit truth telling. If you're leaving as complicated, please work with your regional staff or colleagues to figure out a narrative that is true and kind and says some of the things, but not all the things, just because this isn't the time. So you may be asking, well, I'm leaving and I need folks to know all the things that happen. And there are times for that. You will have an exit interview process with regional staff, with UUA staff. I highly encourage you to engage in that because that is a time where, A, we're really documenting your ministry for the future, like a snapshot of this church's history for the record. And that is a time when, you know, 6 months, a year later, when the leaders of a church read that, they can often see then, okay, these are trends that we saw. Everybody's in a place where they can process the information and translate that into something useful for the future. I don't want to make this sound sneaky, but hopefully future colleagues will call you about the congregation. And you can say at that point with a little bit of distance and perspective that, you know, these are things I think they're struggling with. These are patterns I saw over time. And so you'll continue to have an impact in kind of trying to help the congregation move towards health in that way too. But I just recommend try to stay away from truth-telling, having it out, anything from the pulpit, and regional staff. Like really, I would love to spend time personally with anybody who's in that situation of trying to figure out how to weigh truth-telling and a somewhat healthy departure. We're here to help you with that. I think that's really all I have. I just want to remind you, like you're important, like a parent, you are important to the history and the health of that congregation. It really matters what you do. And so, you know, do whatever you can to have your ending be as healthy as your ministry had tried to be. So, and we will begin and end every statement by please call your field staff early, often, after, all the time. We're here to help.
Thank you, Megan, for bringing those perspectives and guidance. Christine, Patrice, Keith, we have 20 minutes. What would you like to share before we turn to questions?
I'll just jump in real quickly because let me first say thank you to all the panelists for just terrific remarks. And I want to reiterate things you all said because it's like, please remember it all. I'll say a couple of things and I have a question and then I'll turn it over to Patrice and to Christine for their comments. One of which is, I really think that the sweet spot is 6 months to maybe 3 months or 4 months. Too much longer to announce your goodbye. If you, the people who want to do it a year, you've got people who are going to be looking at you going, why are you still here? If you do it more than 6 months out. And if you do it shorter, they will feel robbed. People will remember how you leave maybe as much as the rest of your entire ministry that you are there. And I've watched colleagues ruin whatever they had hoped to accomplish in a ministry in their leaving because they didn't do it well. Some of it was truth telling, some of it is about being mad, some of it is just not being present with a congregation, which is I think really important. The other thing that comes to mind is that sometimes, as Joel was saying, this will be the first good leaving a ministry has had. You literally are setting up your next colleague by how you leave. They will be reactive if it is a poor leaving to the next ministry. So I think that's something we owe colleagues. And the last thing I'll say, and this may be a throw over to Patrice, so Patrice can wait. Patrice and I were talking just yesterday about the impact of leaving when you are a colleague from an historically marginalized identity, what impact that has on people with the same historically marginalized identity in your congregation. There is a different impact for so many folks, particularly if you're a person of color and this is the first minister of color a congregation had, if you're the first transgender non-binary minister and this is the first transgender non-binary a minister has had, that has a different impact on the individuals in the congregation. And I could say a lot more, but I'm going to stop because I'd rather have time for question and answers. Patrice or Christine, do you have anything you would like to add?
Yeah, hi. Oh, Christine, were you going to say something? Sorry, did you unmute? Okay, I'll go ahead and go. As someone who's experienced what Keith was talking about, I do want to lift up that if you hold a marginalized identity, your leaving may be felt differently by different congregants. And they don't, it doesn't necessarily have to be congregants who share the same marginalized identity that you do, but they can feel like the congregation has failed. Any kind of microaggression or maybe tokenism that they've experienced or witnessed in the congregation, they might put on you that's happening to you and that's why you're leaving, especially if you're leaving is out of time, right? So you kind of get rolled up into the experiences that they've had in the congregation. And this can split congregations. It has caused anger among congregants if they feel as if the minister, you are not being treated fairly. And I do want to say that marginalized definition could be being a female identified minister. If you are serving a highly patriarchal congregation, women may feel differently about the fact that you are leaving. right? So they may have that same kind of reaction. So so the grief can be different. You might have to attend a little more. Megan brilliantly said, you know, you're no longer the parish minister, you're now a chaplain. So attending to perhaps those different feelings or deeper feelings that some congregants may be having might be something that you need to do. There might be anger, and this could be really tricky. So if there is anger and congregants are really feeling upset, you know, we have to remember to just be differentiated and not sort of feed into what might be happening, even if the reason that you're leaving is because you feel there was some aspect of that, right? Not to feed into that. To feed into that anger. It's an opportunity for us to really lean into being really, you know, compassionate and really our whole chaplain self and trying to be careful, even if, as Megan said, or maybe whoever it was that said, you know, even if you feel like you are leaving angry. So it's so that's a kind of a tricky part. So I just wanted to kind of lift that up. And I, you know, really, you really have to attend to it, because even though I'm talking here about marginalized identities, there may be something else that's moving that feels similar, particular group of congregants feeling that they're feeling particular grief, or they're feeling, you know, particular anger around a reason, and just to not, you know, to be careful not to kind of see the congregation as a monolith, but to watch for those special pockets where you might be able to lean into and need to give a little extra love. So with that, I'll turn over to Christine.
Thanks, Patrice. Christine Purcell, Transitions Program Manager at the UUA, kind of red hair, big chunky glasses, stained glass behind me, coming to you from Central Connecticut, the ceded lands of the Tunxis people. It's funny, Megan, you said so much that I would have said and we didn't check in. How funny. similar to what Megan said, but not just related to radical truth telling. If the ministry wasn't and the ending isn't ideal in some way, try to avoid prescriptions delivered in anger. Once you announce your departure, you don't get to say what happens next. I mean, leadership has work to do to determine how they want to move forward with their ministry. There are ways to assure or make more likely, at least, that congregations get the care, the support they need, that they do the work that they need going forward. Megan mentioned the exit interviews. Certainly, you know, talking with UUA staff, regional staff, as part of your departure, outside of the exit interview, even just to say what your experience was, because we hold that memory and we hold the congregation in care and accountability going forward. So you can shape their experience by talking with UUA staff. I've seen a few times it happen that someone kind of yells, "You're broken and need developmental ministry," on their way out the door. And that's not it. That's not it, friends. You have so much power in the moment of your announcement to shape the congregation's course. If you can, leave them feeling hopeful about what's ahead in some way. You know, sometimes I get the first call from an anxious president saying, "Oh, we're in search. And we didn't know this was coming." And when those conversations go best, I hear from them, well, the departing minister said that it's going to be okay, that the UUA will help us, that we're going to be held in care. Maybe the minister sent some handbooks. They can do some reading ahead. But mainly that the minister who's leaving sees some good in them, even, you know, if everything wasn't ideal, just to say, this is good. This, you can be hopeful about this, just because you can really hurt a congregation and the next colleagues who work with them by weaponizing your departure or leaving poorly. That's what I would say. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Christine. We have 11 minutes before the hour. I already have a couple of questions. If you have questions that you think are suitable for this public setting that everyone can learn from, feel free to send them to me in the chat. One of the questions that was sent asked about leaving when other staff will have left recently, and I believe Christy addressed some of that. If you have anything to add, colleagues who spoke on the panel, you're welcome to add to that. The other part of that question is, how disruptive is it to leave in December or January?
I'll talk about the second one first for a second. I've actually encouraged it in some situations, depending on the congregation. Sometimes ministry should, I mean, one of the complications of our system is that we're on a once a year settlement cycle for the most part. Other than the Central Conference of American Rabbis, no one else has that system. Ministries end when they're supposed to end. And sometimes the better time for an ending is mid-year. In some cases, literally it's come down to it, helping a congregation save money. And another, as a couple people pointed out, if the minister has nothing left to give, you're probably better off leaving than you are sticking around, just sort of being there if you're kind of done. We do have the targeted ministry program, congregations looking for short-term ministry with retired colleagues, which is a possibility for the gap. Some congregations may need time. One of the things we've learned during the pandemic is that sometimes having a year off from ministry has not been a bad thing. It's actually been a good thing for a congregation, and it has allowed them to value. One of the things that we've learned in the pandemic is that congregations are now valuing ministry more than they did prior to the pandemic. So those are my thoughts in particular on mid-year. And always, you know, I'll reiterate what Megan and Christine said, talk with colleagues, talk with staff. Let's figure out what's best.
Thank you. So that if folks don't mind, I'd like to just turn to a few more questions. So I wonder who might speak to this from someone retiring after a long ministry, 18 years with a congregation that they love and have long relationships with some staff members. What are some of the experience you have had negotiating those kinds of relationships? Joel.
You know, there's a couple of things that I've seen with a long ministry where there's a lot of love. How you leave is so important. I want to emphasize what Keith said, that you'll do more ministry in your last 3 or 4 months than you might do in 10 years. When you're you're in that settled relationship. One of the things I try to do as an interim is find a loving way for a previous minister and congregation to keep engaged. I think cutoffs don't serve congregations well. In the past, interims have said, no, the minister can't talk to anybody for 3 years. But when it's a really harsh cutoff, it creates a void, and the congregation develops a sort of mythical, unrealistic longing that's not helpful. Likewise, the last thing I think is helpful is, and I'm going to say this because I'm an old white cisgendered guy, the old white cisgendered guy who just can't let go because he never had any personal life, his whole life was the congregation, and he keeps meddling, and that's not good. You have to make space for your successor, both the interim and the next called minister. So don't cut off, but back off enough that you're leaving space for the next ministry and the congregation's future.
Thank you, Joel. We have some questions that I think might be answered by all of the very helpful publications from the transition staff. So transition staff colleagues, I wonder if you might throw a few links into the chat. Can someone say in 90 seconds where someone would look for guidance about the process with being named Minister Emeritus?
There is no one process. and again, I watch a lot of colleagues really want to be named Minister Emeritus. I really think it's best if it's the congregation's idea. idea. I also think it's really best if you're not the one to sort of feel like you're pushing it. They have to own. This is another decision they have to own. And this in some ways goes back to saying goodbye more than 6 months out. It stops being about them and it becomes about you. And this is really about you doing ministry with a congregation. They may ask, we occasionally get requests of like, what kind of gift should we give a minister? There are no guidelines for this. I will occasionally talk about if someone's been there for a while, if they want to name the minister emeritus, they can. At best, I think you should let them know that this is an option and leave it there.
Thank you. This is a somewhat detailed question, but I think could apply to more than one person. So if a minister is pre-candidating, search committees are suggested to develop at least one reference from their current congregations, a minister currently serving but pre-candidating somewhere else. But what if they aren't leaving the congregation where they're searching if the search isn't successful? Do you tell them you only plan on giving the church another year if the search isn't successful, so they don't need to hold that secret, or do you not tell them about your future plans?
Generally, what I say is you get one reference in your congregation. You have someone, maybe an HR specialist, maybe a psychologist, maybe someone who is an adult. And usually colleagues call me up and go, they want a reference in my current congregation. They don't need to know. And it's like, you do have an adult in your congregation, right? And then they stop and think about it. And yes, there's usually one. And usually that person is knowledgeable enough to know that this may not work out and you may stay. It's really a question of how many people know and what happens, because then you begin to get into the area of they think you're going to leave. Some people have said they're going to leave. I don't know that that's helpful. If you have one good person being a developed reference in your congregation, we tell the searching congregations they can only ask one person. That's probably enough. I'd leave it there.
Thanks, Keith. And I don't know, I think we can maybe squeeze in one more. What advice, any of you, would you give if a minister is pressed by people in the congregation to tell the real reason for their departure upon their leaving?
I mean, I think that gets back to that narrative, right? And if you think that's going to happen, it probably will. So you might want to think about it regardless. But if you feel like, okay, there's actually several reasons for leaving, and some of them are more sensitive than others, I would really work with colleagues or regional staff to figure out a narrative that you can share that is true. They don't need much like a personnel thing. They don't need all the details. So I can't give a good example off the top of my head, but it is possible, much like when a negotiated resignation happens, to tell a story that is true, but is not all the details, and helps. What you're trying to do is set the stage for the learning to come without getting people's anxiety so high that they're not going to be able to ever do that learning. Instead, they'll like turn on each other like Lord of the Flies or whatever. So work with colleagues, and you may not, just be aware, you may not be the most objective determiner of what works. So, you know, come up with an idea, something you can say, run it by a few colleagues and disinterested parties, and see if you can come up with something that that will work for this short period of time.
Megan, I want to reiterate, it's always more than a single story. And there's always more than one reason. And you can always fall back to, I just know it's time for me to go. And I will reflect more on that. And probably as I do the exit interviews, which you all will do, more thoughts, but you can always say, it's just time for me to go. I just know it's time for me to go.
Thank you. That is, I think, a good note to end on. I'm sure if some of you have questions we didn't get to, you can always reach out to our wonderful colleagues who work for the UA in the transitions office or on congregational life staff. I'm guessing that those who spoke today, colleagues who've been in congregations in various capacities, would welcome your outreach as well. If you have a particular follow-up question, I'm seeing nodding heads. Thank you. I see some of you putting appreciations in the chat. Please do that, to thank all the colleagues who took the time to prepare their thoughts and come and share them with you today. If you know folks who are thinking about leaving, we'll be posting this recording just as soon as we can get it prepared for doing so on our website. And I think that this is going to stay good for a while. I feel like this is the kind of session we had today that's good for at least a couple years. So point people to this resource, especially if you're in good offices, but even if you're a trusted colleague, someone calls to talk with you about their leaving, so that they can have the wisdom of many people's perspectives. It's often said, there are many poems that say an ending is a new beginning. And so I wish all of you who are anticipating endings, good endings in which your ministries can be celebrated, and beautiful new beginnings, whatever that next chapter of your life looks like. Thank you for coming today. And thank you all so much again for preparing to share these reflections with colleagues. We appreciate you. Thank you.